So hello everybody and welcome to this week's Total Rugby League show. And joining me here on a Wednesday lunchtime in the gloomy north, but only weather-wise, we've got Mr. Alex Davis returning once again. Matthew Shaw is here and Martin Tadler's here. Welcome everybody. So hello everybody and welcome to this week's show, a full and probably accurate fixture preview for the top three divisions coming up on this week's edition of the Total Rugby League show. Also coming up later, we'll be joined by domestic performance coach from Rugby League Ireland, Casey Dunn, to talk about the All-Ireland final from last weekend. But before all of that, shall we start talking about some of the big talking points from this week? Seems a logical place to start, Matthew.
That was normally what you would do on a podcast.
Exactly. Yeah. Me and you. Broadcasters, reserve grade.
Yeah,
the competition has been confirmed.
Finally, look, I think we've known for a while he was coming in, and I think it's a really, really positive step forward. I like what they've done with it. 15 teams, 18 games. Sometimes there's not a lot you can say other than this is a really good thing, and this is indeed a really good thing. I don't think there are any negatives that come from this. I know that people are a bit disappointed that Keighley and Whitehaven are in, but I think the explanation that's been given is fair. And I would say accurate, and I can understand why they've made that call. For the other clubs that are in, Newcastle and Halifax are the only two that had to apply and to get in, didn't they?
It's interesting that Newcastle are in, isn't it? Because, you know, they're making such great progress up in the northeast of England. I think many people would love to see them getting promoted this year from League One to the Championship. And, you know, they've got a great setup at Kingston Park. That'll, you know, really further rugby league up in the northeast, I think.
The thing I love about the reserve grade is that the players that will be coming into the Super League teams that don't necessarily play every week will have been playing every week. Yeah. And that's the key, because these players that are coming in to sides like, you know, Castleford or Hull or whatever haven't been playing, and they're expected to step up to this Super League level. So to have that there is so important.
The other thing is as well, you know, a lot of kids that make the debuts in Super League, there's been many this year, which is great to see. They've normally never played against actual men before. They've just been playing youth, you know, effectively under-19s, and then it's suddenly you're coming up against these 20-stone freaks of nature. Like, you just can't expect to make that step up. So, it's all positive. I think they've been really clever. I know that the full details haven't come out, but it's going to start in line with the Super League season. There'll be a break over Easter, where there won't be as many fixtures, because obviously you pull your squad depth more. So
you don't want the good thing, Matt, is that they're going to play Wednesdays and Thursdays,
which
means that they're going to have the potential to start attracting, you know, decent little crowds, really.
Yeah.
A bit like Women's Rugby League, you know, there's a niche there.
Yeah.
A lot of people enjoy going and watching Women's Rugby League, and I think we're going to find, you know, a lot of fans, well, not thousands, but, you know, a few hundred in each case, will want to see these up-and-coming stars, you know, potential stars of the future playing.
You can almost be certain that the Our League will broadcast some of them as well.
Yeah.
So they'll be getting some coverage, some decent coverage. I'm sure that League Express will be giving, I'll have a roundup.
Well, we'll have a page of coverage, I'm fairly sure.
So I think, and the other thing as well, you know, it's everyone in the game. It's not just the players. It's the operation of a day. For referees, it's a chance for them to maybe play it, to officiate at a higher level than the 19s, who but maybe aren't quite ready for the professional game. So it's great for them. It's great for even, you know, match commissioners. And there's so many people. It's good for the clubs.
It's also worth mentioning, we've in this week's Back Chat programme, we've got Dave Rotherham.
Yeah.
The Rugby Football League's, what's his job title, Matt? You know,
the
don't you?
Interim Chief On-Field Officer. I had to say that.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, I did it in one take, which
you
was
did.
Remarkable.
You did,
really.
But he's talking quite a bit about this. So I think that's really an interesting
on-field
sort of
officer. That's like a referee, isn't it?
So he's effectively in charge of player development, overseeing player development as a sporting hall, referees. Yeah, that's his interim role anyway.
There's other items which we need to discuss before we get into Super League as well. Last week we were suggesting that Steve Ganson should come out and say something at least about referees and the spotlight that was put on them last week, and he has come out.
Can I make a point as well? A bit of an exclusive, not that it's going to break, you know, the internet or anything.
Might do.
Steve Ganson contacted me to ask to come on Back Chat. So he's booked in for the September the 5th edition.
Good.
So, you know, and to be fair to Steve, he came to us. It wasn't a case of us going to him. So
I think Steve is actually a great guy, and he's very keen to, you know, come out in public and explain what the RFL's doing. So, you know, it's great to know that he did that. And that's the programme to look forward to, I think, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to park it right there. I'm not going to bother talking about Crown Trouble or anything like that.
No, I think we should do, actually.
Do you want to?
Okay. I think we should do, because I don't think we... I think we've got to be realistic. And we can't just make out that this is something that we can brush under the carpet, I'm afraid.
I was about to.
No, but the thing is, it's the RFL's appointed an investigator to get to the bottom of the Catalans' situation, you know, that at that match. And until he reports, it's actually difficult to draw any firm conclusions.
But, you know, we had another incident at Keighley this weekend where a ball boy was beaten. I mean, what? I think we're abusing ball boys now. What is going on?
Well, we're not, but somebody was. Yeah,
I think it's obviously a problem in rugby league, but it's a problem in every sport.
Yeah,
and in general, in this country, I think it's
100% agree. But we as a sport are in a far better position than football, in my opinion, to be able to identify the culprits and get rid of them. The fans know who are doing it.
I think we need a campaign, and I think maybe we should actually launch it in one of our titles to actually improve fan behaviour where it needs improving.
We've got to stop it. Like, abusing ball boys, what do you get out of that? What in your life, what sort of fulfilment do you get? Went to a game and abused a ball boy today. Banter. Brilliant.
Of course, right. you're assuming they've got someone to talk to when they get home.
But the other thing as well, Ben, it's all right as saying that we've got to do this and do that, but we actually do. My big thing is, a lot of people have been saying to me, we just need to get rid of alcohol from terraces. I say, no. Why should... For the 99% of people that can go to a game, have a drink, enjoy themselves and be sensible, be ruined by the 1%. Just get rid of the 1%. Just get rid of them.
In this, you know, but in the modern day world, we will often penalise everybody for the sins of a very small minority.
But why should
we? And that's the thing. But, you know, that remains to be seen in the report of the investigator, doesn't it?
I don't think
we've started off on a very negative note. There's always a tendency when you talk about this sort of thing to make it sound as though it's far more important than in fact it is.
It is serious, and it does.
It is serious.
Out,
but... It is serious. But the RFL, to give them credit, as I say, have appointed an investigator for the Catalans thing. I don't know how long it's going to take for that report to come back. But you know, we've had a lot of letters and communication from fans saying that when they've been to Perpignan, it's been terrific. The home fans have been very welcoming, and by and large they are. Certainly, when I've been to Perpignan, it couldn't have been better. But I just don't think we ought to make people think that this sort of stuff, this sort of rubbish, is happening at all rugby league games. And
it's not happening at all games either. That is a fair
and
point.
It's certainly not a problem that's consigned to rugby league.
No, it's not. It's a society problem, but. But the sport has to do better in getting rid of the people that are causing the problems.
Absolutely. Okay. Right, let's talk about the good stuff then when it comes to rugby league. And obviously we'll start off with Super League. I know Aaron said last week, and he's right, you know, there's too much of a fixation about starting off with the bottom end of the table rather than the top end. And we will give a spotlight to the top end, I promise.
I don't think there's a problem with it.
But there is only one game we could start with this weekend, isn't there? And that's Hull KR against Wakefield. Mm. Blimey. Matthew.
Well, the winner's probably safe, and the loser's probably in a very, very nervy position. What else can you say? Wakefield, for me, aren't showing any signs of improvement. Hull KR are inconsistent, but for me, Hull KR...
I don't think Hull KR are as poor as Wakefield at the moment. No. Wakefield have fallen off a cliff edge, haven't they?
My thing for Hull KR is, and this goes back a few years now, when they're at home, and it's a big pressure game, they seem to lose. Case in point being they lost to Huddersfield a few weeks ago. Case in point, the £1 million game.
Managed to come through against Castleford in Golden Point, though.
They did, but was that a big
game?
It wasn't a £1 million game. It wasn't playing Huddersfield. They weren't playing a relegation
rival.
It's
certainly a big moment. Yeah, for sure.
And they beat.
I think they've shown a significant improvement under Tony Smith. If I'm really honest about it. That's partly due to some fairly shrewd recruitment of loan players and so on. But also I think Tony Smith has given the team a lot of confidence in how they perform. They played pretty well at Wigan.
I was going to say they were tying after 50 minutes, so they were 18.
And I think there were one or two question marks against one or two Wigan tries, at least in Tony Smith's mind. I think Hull KR are going to be formidable opponents for Wakefield on Sunday. And Wakefield, you know, Wakefield just seem to have lost some spirit. And you know, Danny Brough's kicking game is not as good as it perhaps was at the start of the season, and that's
the half-back combination isn't working.
Did they perhaps think the game that the season was finished at one point?
Well, Chris Chester is on record in the paper saying, one more win will do it.
Mm. Clever timing, may I add.
Yeah, because he's basically saying if we win against Hull KR, then he's probably right, probably, because of London's points difference.
I thought it was a very clever thing to say that.
Will they get that win this weekend, Alex?
Mm. You can't predict any of these games, but I'm going to sit on the fence and say, okay.
Wakefield, for me, need to change the half-back combination because it's just not working. Miller and Brough, if I'm honest, I know that people have been quick to praise Wakefield at times because they think that they're punching above the weight. I thought that the top five was a big opportunity for them this year. It hasn't come off. I don't think that Brough and Miller have clicked all year, I'll be honest. Now, it's how do you change it? Well, for me, the fact that they've brought Morgan Escarre in tells me that they're planning on changing it. Mm. Because why else would they bring a fullback in? It's for me because they're going to put Ryan Hampshire in the halves.
You would imagine so. Now, I think Ryan Hampshire's a really good player. Yeah, and I do. He's not got a contract yet for next season, has he? So, I mean, I think he always asks for big money, does Ryan, which is probably obviously why they've not done a deal with him. But I think Hampshire and Brough together at halfback would probably be a better combination.
One of the big losses for Wakefield, and he's still playing, is David Fifita, but
he's injured.
He's injured.
And to be fair to Wakefield, they've been without Tom Johnston all year. Matty Asher's now out for the rest of the season. Yeah. Bill Tupou were out for months. They've had some injuries. But I'm with Martin. People ask, who do you drop, Brough or Miller? Well, for me, the criticism I had of Wakefield last year was when Miller and Hampshire played together, they ran around like headless chickens together and didn't really have any structure or anyone putting the pieces together. So I think you keep Brough in, put Hampshire there and drop Miller because I think Miller's been... I don't know whether it's the captaincy. It could be the captaincy. But I think Miller's been a shadow of the player he's been in recent years.
I think Brough would be a better captain, personally, because Brough thrives on responsibility in a way that some of the players don't. But I think for Wakefield, it would be absolutely tragic if they were relegated. Because they've had such appalling luck with their key players this year, as we've said. You know, David Fifita injured, Matty Ashurst injured, Tom Johnston out, Bill Tupou only just really coming back into the side in the last few weeks. That's really bad luck, in my view.
You can look a little bit further into the future and see that Wakefield play London on the final game of the season.
Yes.
So obviously, if London have an extra win and are now level on points difference goes out the window for the final game.
Good time to go on to the second most important game.
Well, it's the second one on my list, Matthew. Love it. Catalans against the London Broncos. Huge game for both clubs in many ways. I mean, we'll come to the London side of the equation first. They are running out of road. They've got to get those wins.
Yeah, well, they need two wins, actually, don't they?
They need one win and then until the final game of the season. Obviously, if Wakefield don't win any of their games. If they don't win any of their games, then London can go into that win. Into that game, if they've got one.
Correct
more win,
me if I'm wrong. Do they play Hull KR next week, London? We've got four games left, haven't we?
Yeah, four games.
And correct me if I'm wrong. Their final three games are Hull KR, Leeds, and Wakefield.
And Leeds is the only one that's at home.
So, if you look at this now, if they can win on Saturday,
and they've won before in Catalans,
they've won easy
season,
to be fair. Yeah. But if they could win this, they will be level with one of Hull KR and Wakefield, other than if we get a draw, which the season will tell us isn't going to happen.
What I would say about London is I watched the game against Castleford on Saturday and I thought they were pretty terrible in that second half. Castleford didn't get out of second gear in that second half and managed to win 16-0. London sort of had a pretty good, they had a good start, they were winning at half time. They were on a level and Castleford were on the same level. Castleford kept that level going in the second half, but London dropped hugely and they were awful. They didn't complete sets. Jordan Abdul was doing everything, but wasn't doing it particularly well. They need to play better than that. If they play like that, they won't win any more
games.
How
did Brock Lamb play? Because he's been, he was a big signing in a way.
Lamb scored the try, but beyond that, Abdul did everything else. Lamb was fairly innocuous throughout the game. They will need to play better if they want to win.
I'm not sure that he was a great signing because, bringing in a player in that position at this stage of the season can be disruptive.
Wait, Matt asked me about Brock Lamb when he first signed. Mm-hmm. And I said to Matt, well, Drew Hutchison was playing in front of him at Sydney Roosters. And that might speak some volumes to some people.
To be fair to London, Martin, you say that, but Morgan Smith's out for the season. Mm. Elwar Pelissier has been struggling with injuries, which meant that Cunningham had to go into the hooker. So therefore, they didn't have a half to play alongside Abdul. So they probably did need to make a sign in that department.
Well, maybe.
Whether the right person, time will tell. But London win that. They then will go level on points with one of Hull KR away for the end of the weekend. If it's Hull KR, they go level with, play them next week, and that suddenly becomes an enormous game.
Whether they go down or not, they're making some pretty decent signings for next year.
That's the London Broncos. There's talk about speculation over Batty as well. Do you reckon he's just holding off?
I think he just wants to move back north, from what I know. Don't think it's anything against London. I don't think it's anything against what league they'll be in. I think he just... From Penistone,
I'm sure people will be queuing up for his services.
Back to this particular fixture. London Broncos travelling to Catalans this weekend. It's a big game for Catalans as well.
They were despicable on Friday. In many ways.
I was trying to write the correct sentence for that second half performance, and abysmal, Matt, Paul. I was like, are those too harsh a term?
No. Well, Matt doesn't pull his punches, does he? Saying
no, I read his match report from Halifax.
Despicable
at the weekend.
And so on.
Oh,
yeah.
God, I hope we don't have to talk about that game. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah. But, everything with Matt is absolutely fantastic or horrible.
That's not true.
Which is a bit like Catalans more generally, to be honest.
I
wonder whether anyone heeded his warning as to not read it.
Obviously, we touched upon what this win, a win for London Broncos would mean. Mm. What would a defeat mean for Catalans at this stage of the season, given what Castleford and Salford are doing?
Their top five hopes would be gone if they didn't win.
It looks like Salford want that position. I know Castleford won at the weekend, but they weren't particularly impressive. Salford are the ones that look like they want that place.
Well, Salford and Castleford are on level points with Catalans, but Salford's points difference is so much better.
Salford play Hull this week. I mean, they could go within 2 points of third. Could Salford?
Or they could drop out of the five. If they lose that game, yeah. I mean, Catalans, as daft as it looks, Catalans could be in the top five again by the weekend.
The table's nuts. Leeds were in relegation problems a couple of weeks ago, and their points difference is better than Hull's in third. It's just ridiculously crazy.
It's starting to balance out a bit because it was really bad early in the season. I think there was only three teams in positive points difference, wasn't there, at one point. But just before we move on from Catalans, the TV deal problems. Obviously, Super League are trying to help them out with this. It does need sorting, doesn't it, for next season? Yeah.
Well, it does, because if it isn't sorted, then we won't be able to see Catalans games on television in this country, as well as in France. But, of course, it would be an awful lot easier, wouldn't it, if Toulouse got promoted from the Championship, as is a real possibility.
They're working on it.
And there were, a home game every week for a broadcaster to cover. What I'm not sure about is how much money they asked beIN Sports for to renew that contract. And obviously, whatever it was, it was a figure that beIN Sports weren't prepared to pay. And that sort of illustrates the fact that rugby league at the moment in France is not big enough, really.
Which is disappointing considering the momentum the sport had in France last season.
Last season and this season, playing in Barcelona. I mean, whether beIN Sports would be open to talking further, perhaps reopening the deal, who knows? But there are other channels over there, so I don't know I don't know them in detail.
It's very disappointing. It comes back to a bigger question that's probably been asked a little bit more recently. What have Catalans brought to Super League and the game since they've arrived? Because people will make the point, how many French players have been developed? And there have been some. Have there been as many as were outlined as would come through? Has the French competition improved?
I'm hearing it is.
Yeah, I think they've in part done what they're asked to, and their attendance is fairly good, to be fair. Has it been as successful as they were asked to be, because they were, you know, there was also broadcast bringing in more money. They've done that, probably, it's hard to say. It probably hasn't been as successful a project, one, as it could have been, and maybe two, as
well,
it should
have been.
Well,
I don't know about
you
that.
You can't say that in the same season they played. They've smashed the Super League record.
For sure. You know, the new camp is the legacy of the first.
I think they've been a great success, but the point is that the game as a whole doesn't really understand how to utilise it. That's the real problem. It's not that they're not successful. It's that Super League is not successful, in my opinion, in being able to market and promote itself to really take advantage of everything that it has, because Super League has a tremendous competition. I mean, I think Super League is a tremendous competition, as I think the Championship and League One are. But the trouble is, we don't really fully understand how to exploit it and develop it further. And, you know, I see no signs that, you know, Super League really is able to grasp the nettle and you know, take the sport
The player further. Development side of it, though.
Catalans?
Yeah.
Not as good as we would ideally like it to be.
They reserve side to win the French Championship this year.
Steve McNamara, when he came in, made a thing of, we're going to bring this back, we're going to build a zone, everything like that. And he said all the right things. They brought in French players. Julien went back and Mika Simon went back. And then since then, Sam Tompkins has gone there, Sam Cassiano has gone there, signed James Maloney. It kind of seems like they're going away from that again.
The best comparison, Matt, is London. Because, you know, London, they were set up in 1980.
And their academy are about fifth or sixth, isn't
they? Yeah. But it's taken them there are lots of southern players now throughout Super League, which is great to see. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, fantastic story. But it took them an awful long time to do it.
It took them, again, it comes down to that 15, 20 year period.
Yeah, you know.
The point I'm making, Catalans are at that point now.
Is it 13 years now?
13 years,
you know, they're getting close, aren't they?
Yeah.
And the players that are French that are good didn't do it at Catalan. Theo Farge left when he was 16.
Yeah.
You know, Julien was at Warrington. I just think it's a... Gigo went briefly to the NRL, had some time at London. You know, I mean, he spent most of his time in France. But do you know what I'm saying? I'm not convinced.
It goes back to what
Martin they've not
said
convinced
about utilising it a bit better. And
it does.
All the pieces are there.
Yeah.
Just needs to put it together.
We need to understand.
We're only on the third fixture, everyone. Come on.
Sorry.
So, Catalans against the London Broncos. Remember that one. Huddersfield against Castleford is the other crucial game involving a relegation candidate with a playoff candidate. I'm going to go to the playoff side of things first, because we've discussed Catalans' chances there. You know, if they don't beat London, is that it? What about Castleford and their trip to Huddersfield, Alex?
They need to improve, Castleford, from their last performance. I think they will. They lack a little bit of leadership, I think, on the field. With Shenton not there, with Gale not there, and of course with Watts not there now, I think that's a huge amount of experience.
I think
Watts
missing is going to be really crucial.
So you're pretty much relying on Paul McShane, and I think McShane has been a little bit disappointing this year. I think he loses his head too much. I think his discipline has nosedived a little bit. He's still a really important player for Castleford, make no bones about, make no mistake about it. But I think they are lacking leadership on the field. And if Huddersfield are canny, they can probably get one over
him. I think he's looked like a player that has been trying to take on the responsibility.
I think he looks burdened with responsibility.
That's a good word.
I mean, what does that hard fought? Because it was hard fought, wasn't it? I suppose the win over London, or was it a bit?
Well,
what does it tell us?
In a lot of ways, it wasn't hard fought because London gave it to us on a plate. They did, because in the way they played in that second half, they just did not complete sets every time they dropped the ball coming out of their own end, and we just scored a few decent tries in that third 20 minutes and won the game. We didn't really do much, and against Huddersfield that won't be enough, I don't think, even though Huddersfield are on a bit of a slide.
Huddersfield, I think
there was a bit of fight against Salford, wasn't there?
Ben, come on.
They were 12-10 up.
They're in a relegation battle. If you don't have fight, then that's the absolute minimum there should be. Come on.
I think Huddersfield will fancy the chances against Castleford this week.
I'm sure they will. They've lost.
Well,
Matt
they've
English,
got to, haven't they? They've got to fancy their chances because they've got to win.
But the problem I have with Huddersfield at the minute, they put Lee Gaskell at fullback at the weekend. They dropped Frawley. They put Holmes and Russell in the halves. Is this really the time? Shouldn't by now you know what your best spine is? And for me, their best player this year has probably been Gaskell.
Yeah, yeah.
Why do you move him to fullback?
Yeah,
McIntosh as well has been another standout performer who's moved around.
Well,
the team,
McIntosh, unfortunately, as he proved with his contribution to Salford's final try, can't pass the ball.
He's a raw talent, isn't he?
He can't pass the ball.
His key is his elusive running.
Yeah,
and that's why he shouldn't be playing fullback, because fullbacks in the modern day game need to be passers, defenders, runners, and that's why Rankin is doing better at Castleford now he's at fullback, because he has quite an all-round
game.
Who
said that should happen?
I don't know. I can't
but you know, for me, they put faith in McIntosh being a fullback, and he's not one.
But that thing about Rankin playing at fullback, I think you're absolutely right. That's his best position, and isn't it remarkable that Huddersfield let him go?
Yeah,
you know, to Castleford.
So Huddersfield against Castleford, that match taking place on Sunday. The TV game on Thursday night. And are we safely saying Leeds are all right now?
Oh, I think
yeah.
so.
Yeah. So, Leeds taking on St Helens, who are also all right. Not much to play for in this game all of a sudden, is there?
This is interesting, this. What sort of team are they going to put out, say?
They'll put out the strongest side.
They need to maintain the momentum.
Yeah, they need to give everybody a run before Wembley.
I think they'll play a stronger team than they have... than they did against London.
Oh, yeah.
And, to be honest, Saints will think, oh, this is a good test now. Leeds are playing
pretty
well.
Yeah. I don't think Coote will play.
I don't think he's fit. No.
But I think because Worms has had an eye injury, hasn't he? I mean, it's not something like he's got a, you know, so he's had a few weeks off the rest of the body. You wouldn't think that his eye. So I think he'll play. They might. I think they'll rest a few.
A lot of the talk about St Helens isn't necessarily team selection. It's who's going to be the head coach next season. Seems a bit perverse to start talking about that at this stage. But you know, journalists are journalists. Aaron, this is a test for you three now. Whether you read Aaron's reports in the paper
quick
or not.
Turns to page six.
Two candidates, it seems, for the job next season.
Wolf
and O'Brien.
Yeah. I'm a little bit disappointed.
It's not that bad a story.
No. Just that all the names that are being bandied about are every nationality but British.
Yeah.
Well, and also they're not head coaches in Australia. Yeah. I mean, basically what we've got the outstanding Super League team in England that could probably beat quite a lot of NRL teams, I would think. With a coaching vacancy, and we're saying, you know, we're looking at guys who are assistant coaches or even, you know, reserve grade coaches in the NRL to come and take the reins of the top club in the competition.
I mean, you put it this way, I think if Saints came up against Gold Coast Titans tomorrow, Saints would wipe the floor with them.
Yeah.
They would, because the Titans have just got nothing about them. No confidence, no nothing. And Holbrook has got a massive job on his hands getting there. But that's maybe why he wants to go there. It's a big challenge.
I'm sure he'll do it, you know. But you know, St Helens, you know, it's a bit like, you imagine the top team in Australia is Melbourne. Let's imagine Craig Bellamy announced his retirement. And Melbourne were looking at assistant coaches in Super League. To take over, how ridiculous would that be? And I think when we talk about Super League, and you know, we've still got this inferiority complex towards the NRL, which I hate. I really hate it. You know, this assumption that whenever a club is looking for a new coach, they've got to go to an assistant coach at the NRL because they're all trying to replicate what Wigan did with Michael Maguire and what Saints have done. To be fair, with Justin Holbrook, you know, but. You know, for God's sake, we've got lots of really potentially good coaches in this country, and Richard Agar is demonstrating that at Leeds. You know, David Ferner was brought in above him, But Richard Agar's proved to be a much better
coach.
And there
are some exceptional young coaches in the Super League and in the Championship.
Sure. Yeah. But it's true, you know, this obsession with Australian coaches. I mean, there are some great ones. And Holbrook, I think, has been really
for sure.
Good.
You know, whose fault it is? It's Alex's for his NRL reporting. Yeah. Put the spotlight on the competition.
I'll just make it out like it's all rubbish over there.
just before we leave this conversation about British coaches, one British coach who's doing quite well is Richard Agar. I think I'm going to ask this question about another three times this season.
He wants the job. I don't care what he says.
Okay.
Ooh, right, here we go. At the start of the year, when he came in, he was adamant, I don't want it. It's short term. You ask him now and he doesn't say he doesn't want it. I'd like to think, without being big-headed, that as a company, if we knew that Leeds were talking to other coaches, we'd know about it. We're hearing nothing. So everything says to me that Richard Agar, A, wants it, and B, will get it.
Well, just think how difficult it would be next year. Let's imagine they did go and get an Australian and put him in charge for next year with Richard Agar working under him. Mm. When Richard Agar's turned the season round this year, or looks as though he has done, you know, that would make it really... it would be really difficult for the top guy to have Richard Agar working under him next year because... You know, he'd be comparing himself all the time with what Richard had done in the second part of this season. And I think that would lead to all sorts of tensions. So you either appoint Richard or you thank Richard at the end of the season and let him go somewhere else, where I'm sure he'd find it fairly easy to get a coaching job. Yeah. I wouldn't keep him as a number two next year to a top coach who you bring in from elsewhere.
Fair. Of course, if League Express does get wind... It'll be in League Express on Monday.
In fact, Matthew's role now is to find out who, you know...
Yeah, you're not trying hard enough.
No.
I never do.
TotalRL.com, the other place to go for all your breaking news, including head coach appointments at various clubs across the world, including the NRL. Two more games to talk about before we go. Talk about the Championship. Friday, Wigan against Warrington, which has suddenly turned into the battle for second spot. And who would have thought that?
Warrington will rest a lot of people, and Wigan will probably beat them fairly easily.
Can Warrington afford to rest players?
Well,
I know they have to, but...
Well, their main challenge is for second place is Hull, because Hull are on the same points, and Hull play Salford this weekend. So you would imagine, wouldn't you, that... That Hull would probably win that game and jump over Warrington into second place. So,
will Hull win?
Well,
Salford are flying.
They are, but you know,
four on the bounce. Winning easy as well, Martin.
Who is getting second? Do you think?
Well, I think Hull are in the very good chance at the moment. I think Wigan might just run out of time, but you know, you never quite know. And Wigan are in with. I mean, Hull have got a terrible points difference. Warrington have got a great points difference. Wigan have got sort of an average points difference, I suppose. So it's still impossible to say who's going to end up where. But isn't it great that every position counts so much?
Yes.
You know, it's so much better to be second than third. It's so much better to be third than fourth. And so much better to be fourth than fifth.
The other thing as well here, Cass and Catalans could win this weekend. If Warrington lose, they're suddenly only 2 points safe. In the playoffs.
Yeah.
Which and what's the win percentage of teams coming off Wembley? Low.
I think Wigan will overtake them and get into second. I think they're looking
Warrington,
pretty ominous.
Warrington could drop out of the five. Could
they won't.
Potentially.
The points difference is a bit eye-watching, isn't it?
Yeah, points difference is too good.
We've got an extra half point, haven't they, really?
All I'm saying is they could only be 2 points clear. And admittedly, yeah, if they lose the week after Wembley, which most teams normally do, they could be level. That's all I'm saying.
But that's not my business.
I'm not saying that I don't think they will. I'm just saying it's, you know, there's potential.
Just while we're talking about Wigan, I should just mention the interview with Ian Lenigan in the paper. I mean, I go back to our shows early in the season and throughout the season as well, when there's all kinds of controversies. It's been a very bumpy season, but it looks like Wigan, it's all coming together right on the night kind of thing.
Wigan are like a racehorse, aren't they, that in the derby, that, you know, by going down to Tottenham Corner, it's well down the field, and then they turn into the straight and suddenly it sprints through and, you know, overtakes every other horse in the field. and eventually wins.
You know when the season's coming to an end because
we're going to start playing.
You hear someone say, "We're going to make the grand final again, aren't they?" That, you know that the season's coming to an end.
I remember my esteemed colleague in League Express, Gary Schofield, writing at the start of the season that Wigan have no chance of getting in the top five this year, and look at them now.
They're playing some good. They're starting to play the brand of rugby that Adrian Lamb promised.
And they are bringing some young players through. That last game, Smithies, Partington, phenomenal. Liam Byrne.
Yeah.
Very inexperienced kid, actually, Liam Byrne, but playing extremely well.
Smithies should be in contention for Great Britain. There, I've said it.
Just before we move on to the Championship, Saturday's match, Hull against Salford. I know we touched upon it briefly there, but Ian Watson's in the papers saying it's in our hands now. And it kind of is, isn't it?
They're in the five.
Well, if they win every game now, of course, they're going to be in the five and more besides.
And he's, I know we talked about Danny Ward and Justin Holbrook and stuff, but that's contender for.
There are a few. If we're going game wide.
If he did it.
If you're going game wide, if Saints win the treble, I don't think you can not give it Justin Holbrook. You've got Salford, you've got Danny Ward, and probably York. James Ford getting York into the playoffs, which looks like it will happen.
Not. I'd go Ian Watson over Danny Ward personally.
Well, unless London stay up.
If London stay up, you've got to give it Danny Ward. But Watson's been, his job's been phenomenal.
Well, that's the Super League, and like we said, TotalRL.com, and there'll be match reviews galore on in Monday's League Express as well. But just before we move on to talk about the game in Ireland, just a mention for the Championship in League One. Firstly, Championship, barring a mammoth wheels-coming-off effort from Toulouse and Lee, they pretty much secured the playoffs because they're on 34 points and Sheffield can only get 34, so there you go. York, though, have to wait after a defeat in Toronto, while Featherstone are nearly there after beating Swinton.
Well, York play Fev, don't they? So one of those two will book the place in the playoffs this weekend.
It's a big game this weekend, that one. Should say, while I talk about Swinton, congratulations to Matty Ashton. That's a rise to prominence, isn't it?
Not just to Super League, amateur to one of the big Super League clubs.
He's been a try-scoring machine this year.
Well, what a great signing. For Warrington.
Yeah. Broken League Express, that.
Yes, it was. Sorry. Yes, exclusive in League Express as well. And congratulations to Rochdale Mayfield as well. While we're congratulating people.
There's loads coming through from Mayfield. They're doing a great job.
But as we said, Sheffield and Bradford can still get there.
Only just.
it's a good match report, that. The Sheffield Halifax one. And I was speaking to a Sheffield player, and he pretty much agreed. He says it wasn't the best game.
There we go. I can't repeat how Mark Aston described Sheffield's performance to me, but let's just put it politely. He said it wasn't very good and they won the game. It was awful.
It's another 2 points though for Sheffield. They're knocking them out.
Listen, at the end of the day, all you got to do at this time of year is win, isn't it? But I'm not bothered about who wins and loses. I just want to see a good game of rugby. Now, most games of rugby I enjoy because I just love rugby league, but that was garbage. That was absolutely awful.
Okie dokie. We should say Sheffield are taking on Barrow this weekend, and as Matthew said,
Part with a full-time whistle, Ben. Best with a half-time one.
York or Featherstone will be dropping points this weekend, or potentially both. It's still all to play for. Whilst down towards the bottom end of the Championship, a big congratulations to Batley, who've secured safety. This is based on my abacus and my abacus alone, but I think they're safe.
Yeah.
With a win over neighbours Dewsbury, they had over 1,600 turn up, and congratulations as well. They smashed through that £100,000 barrier for Beverly's Pink Weekend.
I'm disappointed for them that they get to Wembley because they deserve that. Fair play, Sheffield. Though.
Yeah,
nothing against Sheffield.
As I said earlier, we will be talking the game in Ireland shortly, but before that, to League One. Oldham. There you go. A big Scott Naylor spanner in the works thrown in.
Absolutely.
Newcastle defeated by Oldham, and Oldham have put themselves in the title race.
They didn't see that coming.
Is that... It's a tall ask now for Newcastle to make the title?
Yeah.
Well, no. I mean, Whitehaven have got three quite easy games, actually. I think they play West Wales and two others, if I remember rightly. So I think Whitehaven are going to be the top team, but the question then is who wins the playoff. And it'd be really useful for Newcastle if you're a supporter of theirs that they came second.
Oldham have got a better points difference.
To be fair, you know what? To be fair to Whitehaven, we mentioned all the coaches. Gary Challen's got to be up there because
it's a Cumbrian team as well.
I don't remember many people tipping Whitehaven to win League One,
especially last season.
So fair play.
that would be a great achievement. And as you said, it's predominantly Cumbrian.
But just to say elsewhere, Doncaster pretty much scuppered London Scholars' efforts, I think, to get into the playoffs, but only just 23-22.
What's
that one
happened
for
to the Scholars? They were top after about 11 games, weren't they?
Yeah, they've lost a lot of games quite narrowly.
I mean, we interviewed them in Rugby League World, didn't we? And I tried to balance it out by getting Jermaine on this show to talk about Jamaica. And
there is an actual thing that is known as a Rugby League World curse. It's mainly if you're on the cover, but seemingly is lingering into the actual bulk of the magazine now.
We're only joking. It's a great publication, great exposure for your team. If you want to, please speak to us. Workington are now 4 points inside the playoffs now after defeating West Wales, whilst Hunslet remain. It's a tall ask, but they're an outside bet because of the points difference as well. Hunslet still involved in the title race after defeating Keefer at the weekend.
I'm not saying it.
Aaron can get his own show, or he can turn up more if he wants to do his own catchphrases on the show. But yeah, there we go. Keighley taking on Whitehaven this weekend on Sunday, incidentally. Newcastle hosting the Coventry Bears, and a big game, Oldham against Doncaster on Sunday, whilst there's also the Welsh Derby on Saturday, with West Wales eyeing that one up.
Seeking their second win of the season.
And their first against North Wales ever. Mm. But it's now time to draw our eyes away from the Heartlands and across the Irish Sea. The All-Ireland final took place last weekend between the Longhorns and the Dublin City Exiles. And to find out what happened, well, I know what happened, the Longhorns won. Coach from the Longhorns, good intro this. I've not written down this intro, I'm winging it. Coach for the Longhorns, Casey Dunn, also happens to be the domestic performance coach for Rugby League Ireland, and I caught up with him earlier on Wednesday morning.
Firstly, thanks so much for having me on and for giving me the opportunity to speak on behalf of Rugby League Ireland. It was a great day. I think we had 10 or 11 games on the day. The All-Ireland final itself was streamed live across our Facebook channel, and it was a good success. We had a good crowd despite the weather, and we had two good teams going at a hammer and tongs in the final. Lucky enough, my club, Longhorns, came out on top.
Obviously, like you said there, I mean, it wasn't just the All-Ireland final that took place at the weekend. There was several games which took place across all standards and all age ranges. How has this season been domestically for Rugby League Ireland, do you feel?
I've been around the game for a while now, especially in Ireland. I think it's definitely heading in the right direction. We're going in that direction, and we've got, you know, we've evidence to support that. We've an increase in the amount of registered players. We've an increase in the amount of volunteers, match officials. We've seen a significant increase in youth level this year. You know, we've got our under-16s playing Scotland now on the 24th, doubleheader with our Irish under-19s. But we've played teams from England, Keefe, Albion and Olam St. Anne's have come over, and we've played them at 14s and 16s level. As students this year, our standards have gone up, and 19th this year have been incredibly competitive against basically an English rep side. It was Scotland. They've got a couple of Scottish players in there, but most of them are playing in English NTL level, where a couple of them are involved with Super League Academy sides. And also we played a Wales side in Wales that had 9 or 10 Super League Academy players playing, and we had won, and they beat us by 14 points. We've had more games at underage level than there's ever been before, and it, you know, it really, really is an exciting time to be a part of the game, really.
The Longhorns, I think, also played in the Challenge Cup in the last couple of seasons as well. I mean, how important is that for gauging the standard and where you're up to at the moment?
Well, it's the cream on the top, really, isn't it? It's like, you know, it's all your hard work, and that's where you actually get to say, look, listen, that's the standard you're at, or this is the standard where we want to get to. You know, just to give you an idea, like when the touching on Longhorns briefly, where the Longhorns played last year, or 2 years ago in the Challenge Cup, half of the team had played a game of Union the day before the game of going out against West Hull. So we had a bit of a better preparation leading up to Loch Lane this year. And to be honest with you, I feel we could have snatched it from them. And they obviously went on to play Batley in the fifth round. And you know, it could have been us really in the fifth round. And obviously the word, you know, a lot more people would be talking about what has been going on. And we kind of went a bit under the radar with that. But our Irish club side then went out and played Featherstone this year. And it was basically nip and tuck up to the last 10 minutes. And they just pulled away with a bit more freshness in them. But the things we're doing at the minute is just trying to put us into a place where we can actually gauge what we're at, our level. You know, our under-19s this year started off, we had a competitive game against Scotland. Then we went over to Wales 19s. We had a competitive, very competitive game with them then, and then we bet Scotland on the return fixture to Scotland, and we've got Wales next week. Half our side is going to be Super League Academy players that have been with us since they were 15, and some of them are Irish boys as well. So, you know, we're slowly creeping into all levels, and we're really doing ourselves justice, really, at the minute with the performances we're putting in. But what we're focusing on now is developing our own players, and it's not relying on, say, for example, Peter Ryan and Mikey Russell went in the past. They went over to Coventry and played with Coventry, and yeah, James Kelly, I think, he played a while with Coventry. But we've got a new crop that's coming through that have been playing leagues since they were 14 or 15, you know, and have played some good games. You know, nearly all of our 19s players have played either with Super League Academy players or against Super League Academy players. You know, nobody really before them could actually say that they've been doing it. Like I said, at a minute, one of our leading lights at underage level is Ronan Michael, but, you know, he's quickly followed the likes of James Mulvaney and Kevin Bargy, who played Challenge Cup games, played against, you know, played some really good games underage level from 16s to 19s, and, you know, they're going to be in the game, they're going to be in the team this weekend against Keighley. So them boys are actually playing Championship Reserves type standard games, which is far higher than that was ever played before. And that's only going to lead us on to good, to really good things, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of good things, there's also the international game. You touched upon the under-19s and the under-16s and the youth side of things. But the national side itself, head coached by Stuart Littler, who I think we can all agree has had a cracking season being the head coach of the Swinton Lions as well this year. That qualification group with Spain and Italy, looking forward to that campaign coming up in the autumn?
It's an incredibly exciting time to be a part of it. And when you know that, you know, Italy are going to possibly have a good few heritage players, maybe coming from Australia, possibly, I'm not too certain, you know, but I suspect that would be the case. We've got some lads there that are going to be part of a group that have been a part of a group for the last year or two, that were part of the group last year in the European Championship, and we're going to be a lot stronger going into it this year. And we've got quite a young group, but it bodes well, really. It really, really does bode well, and I'm really looking forward to the, especially the Italy game at home in Morton Stadium in November. It's going to be a cracker because, like I said, we've got the Irish clubs are going to be playing Barrel of 23s in the doubleheader before that game against Italy, and it's really going to lead into a good atmosphere. At halftime, we're going to have presentations during the World Cup qualifier with Italy and Morton. We're going to have presentations. We're going to be giving caps to our 16s, 19s. The Longhorns are going to be getting their All-Ireland final medals during halftime. We're going to have a team of the year. The Irish domestic team of the year is going to be getting recognition for what they've achieved this year. So there's a lot of things going on that are just going to be on the day, not just the World Cup qualifier. There's plenty of things happening, but obviously the World Cup qualifier is the most important thing, making sure we qualify. But yeah, it's a really exciting time to be a part of it, and I'm really, really looking forward to the end of the year, to be honest.
Sounds like a cracking day, and I hope you get a really big crowd for it, because it sounds like an amazing event that's been teed up for that November international against Italy. And this mini tour that's happening with this basically domestic all-star team playing the likes of Keighley and Featherstone, how important are these games, and how do you think you're going to compare to these sides?
Well, it's actually showing our lads that, look, listen, we're going to put you on it. We're going to definitely put you in the limelight here, and we're going to put you up where we had Ryan Carr, the Featherstone head coach. We also had Stuart Littler, the head coach. We had Jed Corcoran, the assistant coach for Sheffield Eagles, and we have some big names in the game in different levels, and they were all watching our game against Featherstone the first time, and they all complimented our players. You know, obviously Stuart and Jed are involved with the Ireland setup, but you know, they were, you know, Featherstone basically said, look, listen, you kind of caught us a bit of surprise. We didn't think you were going to give us this much of a challenge, you know. And yeah, it's good to hear that. But I know what we've got here. I know what we've got in Ireland. I know what the support and development we can put into these lads. We could, you know, we should be definitely looking to aim for that reserve grade if we can get into it in possibly another year or two, because we have the players to do it. We just got to maybe support them a bit better. Obviously, that's up to the board and Rugby League Ireland to support them and get as much support as we can. But it's massively important for showcasing our players. Massively important.
That's very interesting, isn't it? Because it would take it up the development of the game in Ireland up a gear or two. I mean, a lot of people would suggest, you know, as been suggested in the past, maybe a Dublin side in League One. But there, that would work quite well, wouldn't it? Having, you know, matching up with reserves and that kind of thing.
Well, put it this way, I think you've got a lot of dreamers in rugby league, like you have in any sports. And you know, everybody wants a team in Dublin. Everybody wants a team here. Everybody wants a team there. But you've got to get back to reality, and you've got to say, look, listen, the game can't support a Super League side here at the minute. What I can support is a reserve grade side. What's the distance between a reserve grade side and a League One side? Not that much of a distance, is there? So we're closer to League One than we are to Super League, but we're going in the right direction. You know, we're putting out a team that's going to consistently play against reserve sides, And next year we want to double the amount of games. Like next year I'm hoping for 10 games for this Irish club side to play against reserve sides. I know the reserve grade competition has changed a bit over there recently, last month or so, but you know, we're really knocking on the door there. We're actually, you know, we're growing our own players, developing our own players, and we're trying to give them an avenue where they can go out and express themselves.
Are you optimistic for the future for the sport in Ireland?
To say I wouldn't even use the word optimistic. I know where we're going. We're going in the right direction. We're keeping our head down and putting the left foot in front of the right foot and making sure we're ticking the boxes we have to comply with, because we've had some incredible help this year. You know, we were a new board to come in with Rugby League Ireland this year, and we faced a lot of challenges, but we've faced them challenges head on, and we've had massive support from the RFL, RLOF, RLEF, and our own Sport Ireland. And the way we're going, the direction we're going, the only way is up, and that is the truth.
Casey Dunn there from Rugby League Ireland, and interesting about the angle, because a lot of people say, you know, a Dublin side in League One would be great for the sport, but he's talking about a domestic team taking on reserve grade and maybe getting more involved in the reserve grade competition, which goes back to what we were saying earlier. That might be an avenue.
Well, the interesting thing is that there are 15 teams in the reserve grade comp, so every week there'll be one team not having a game that would be available to play, you know, somebody like that. So, you know, great idea, really. And it sort of reminds me a bit of the sort of putting the PNG Hunters into the Queensland Cup in Australia and bringing a Fijian side into the New South Wales competition, effectively reserved.
I seem to remember in cricket, didn't Scotland and Ireland and Holland used to play in the County Championship competitions a few times when they were developing, and that works quite well. A big congratulations as well, while we're congratulating the Longhorns on the All-Ireland final win. Congratulations to the Rhondda Outlaws, who won the Welsh Grand Final at the weekend. Also, a big congratulations to the York City Knights women's team, who picked up their first win of the season against Wakefield.
Good.
And we should say, just before we go, Alex, come to you for a bit of NRL corner. Obviously, the coaches are all rubbish in the NRL. The sport itself is rubbish.
Terrible.
But
and one
joking
thing, one thing that's contributing to the terrible rugby in the NRL...
Is stripping.
And we're not talking about players getting clothes off on the pitch.
Because we all know about the morality of the game in Australia, don't we?
But they've changed the rules slightly. To be honest, I like it. Players drop off tackles and one-on-one they strip it. And Josh Hodgson's been right at the forefront of this stripping, as you might guess. And he's the master of it. He tells other players, right, I've got the ball, you drop off and I'll take the ball, and he takes it and runs off with it. And
genius.
I think it's added a skill to the game.
It has, but the thing that the NRL coaches don't like is the fact that it's quite tough for the referees to call it. When does the last player drop off? When does the ball get taken? But to be honest, I think the referees are doing an admirable job in policing that. And I think it should stay. And to be honest, I think they should bring it over here.
Well, the NRL had a readers' poll, didn't they, on the NRL website, where 25,000 people took part. And the majority, I think it was... I actually wrote about it myself in League Express this week. I think the majority was something like 59% said it was a rule that should stay. And they liked it. That's really...
And they're all Raiders fans.
Yeah.
Well, all I think refs do a good job generally.
I think that the NRL has a particular problem with referees. Not that the refereeing standard is... The refereeing standard is excellent, but I think that the Monday press conference they're doing is highlighting all the errors they make and publicising them hugely, saying, we did this, we did that, this is all rubbish. But in reality, they're just not looking at all the things they're doing really well. Yes, referees have to be accountable, but the referees have to be accountable, I think, behind closed doors to a certain extent. They need to improve, but don't shove it in everyone's faces that the referees are doing things wrong.
The reality is, you always think that your team is getting screwed by the ref.
Well, of course.
I'd say that, without a shadow of a doubt, each player probably makes more mistakes than the referee does in a game. Each player will probably make those more mistakes. Well, why aren't we talking about these mistakes?
Yeah, exactly.
As far as coaches blaming referees are concerned, you know, the definition of mental weakness is that you blame other people for your own faults.
Yeah.
So I think once a coach starts blaming the referee, it's a bad sign. It's a sign that the coach has lost it,
yeah.
I think. So stop doing it.
If there's a blatant, blatant shocker, I can understand it.
Mm.
You know, if they've got the ball down and they've claimed it's a knock-on, I get a lot of...
Referees will make mistakes, but they're human. how can we expect these referees to do 100% every time? Because they can't. No one does. So why do we expect referees to do it?
The reality for me is, it's like, again, I always do this, I'm sorry. When I ever, if I lose off something dodgy at table tennis, where if the foul's serving or whatever, and I'll never blame that, because the reality is that if I'd have done things better, it wouldn't have mattered that they were foul serving, I'd have just beat them.
Yeah. So don't, but, you know, we're going down to stupid lengths, and they're doing it in football now, of course, with the VAR thing. And and we're seeing the drawbacks of that. I mean, the best thing to do for me would be to get rid of the video referee altogether and just go back to, you know, relying on the decisions of the referees, right or wrong, but just accepting that they will occasionally make mistakes.
As a VAR highlighted, just because I know a lot of people are critical of video referees in rugby league, but it's highlighted how good it actually is, because, you know, you see the video referee's decisions and you see what he's looking at on the video wall, and everyone in the crowd, you can actually hear them go, oh yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah. You can actually hear them make that collective noise. Just before we go, Alex, the top eight race in the NRL, Penrith and Brisbane currently in shotgun, but still all to play for.
Cronulla looked fairly decent up until last week, and Penrith have just, they're a bizarre team. They were bottom after 12 or so games, then won 7 in a row, and now they've lost 2 in a row, so they're
streaky.
Who knows who's going to make that? I'm again going to sit on the fence on that one.
Excellent stuff. Not sitting on the fence will be your guests on Backchat. Look at the segue then. Beautiful, wasn't it? Backchat on Thursday, what's happening?
We have Martin, we have Dave Rotherham, and we have
Mark Campbell.
Mark Campbell, of course. It was actually, who most certainly did not sit on the fence.
No, he's very good as Mark. He was very good on the show.
And just before we go as well, loads of stuff to talk about in League Express, I'd imagine, on Monday, Martin.
Yes, the former player who's in Rugby League Heroes this week will be Tolson Tollett, interestingly enough, the ex-London player, Harlequins player, when they used to be called Harlequins, and he'll have some interesting things to say, I'm pretty sure.
Well, just to let the listener know, that was the longest recording we've ever done of the Total Rugby League show. So
I apologise.
It's okay. It's okay. There's been a lot to talk about on this week's show. Yeah. But a big thank you to Casey Dunn from Rugby League Ireland for joining us. But also a big thank you to Martin Sadler, to Alex Davis, and to Matthew Shaw. And wherever you're going this weekend, make sure you have fun. Bye-bye.